Jayam Vishnu Pad, Paramahamsa Pad, Rajagachara Sutaya, Shuddha Shri, Shimmas Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, Shri Prabhupada Gujai, Viscan Founder Charya, Shri Prabhupada Gujai, Samaveda Bhakti Rinda Gujai, Order Pimananda, all glorious to some of the devotees, all glorious to some of the devotees, all glorious to some of the devotees, all glorious to Shri Shri Guru and Guranga, Haribo. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srinathi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namane Namaste Sarasvadevam Gauravana Vacharani Nivashesha Srinu Vari Pasti Chari Chitari Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, The Cause of All Causes, Text 14. Dravyam Karma Chakalascha
Dravyam Karma Chakalascha
Svabhavo Jivevacha
Svabhavo Jivevacha
Vasudevat Paro Brahman
Vasudevat Paro Brahman
Nichanyorto Sti Tatpata
Nichanyorto Sti Tatpata
Dravyam Karma Chakalascha
Dravyam Karma Chakalascha
Svabhavo Jivevacha
Svabhavo Jivevacha
Vasudevat Paro Brahman
Vasudevat Paro Brahman
Nichanyorto Sti Tatpatah
Nichanyorto Sti Tatpatah
Dravyam Karma Chakalascha
Dravyam Karma Chakalascha
Svabhavo Jivevacha
Svabhavo Jivevacha
Vasudevat Paro Brahman
Vasudevat Paro Brahman
Nichanyor Tosti Tatpata
Nichanyor Tosti Tatpata
Please chant
Dravyam Karma Chakalascha Svabhavo Jivevacha Vasudevat Paro Brahman Nichanyor Tosti Tatpata
Yeah. to come as time.
Thank you. Dravyam. The ingredients: earth, water, fire, air, and sky. Karma. The interaction. Cha. And. Kala.
Eternal time.
Cha. Also. Svabhava.
Intuition or nature.
Jiva. The living being.
Eva.
Certainly. Cha.
And.
Vasudevat.
From
Vasudev.
Para.
Differentiated parts. Brahman.
O Brahmana.
Na.
Never.
Cha.
Also.
Anya.
Separate.
Arta.
Value.
Asti.
There is.
Tatvataha.
In truth.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The five elementary ingredients of creation, the interaction thereof set up by eternal time, and the intuition or nature of the individual living beings are all differentiated parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. And in truth, there is no other value in them. Purport. This phenomenal world is impersonally the representation of Vasudeva because the ingredients of its creation, their interaction, and the enjoyer of the resultant action, the living beings, are all produced by the external and internal energies of Lord Krishna. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7, 4, and 5. The ingredients, namely earth, water, fire, air, and sky, as well as the conception of the material identity, intelligence, and mind, are produced of the external energy of the Lord. The living entity enjoys the interaction of the above gross and subtle ingredients as set up by eternal time, is an offshoot of internal potency, with freedom to remain either in the material world or in the spiritual world. In the material world, the living entity is enticed by deluding nescience. But in the spiritual world, he is in the normal condition of spiritual existence without any delusion. The living entity is known as the marginal potency of the Lord. But in all circumstances, neither the material ingredients nor the spiritual parts and parcels are independent of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. For all things, whether products of the external, internal, or marginal potencies of the Lord, are simply displays of the same effulgence of the Lord. Just as light, heat, and smoke are displays of fire, none of them are separate from the fire, all of them combined together to be called fire. Similarly, all phenomenal manifestations, as well as the effulgence of the body of Vasudeva, are his impersonal features, whereas he eternally exists in his transcendental form called Satchidananda Vigraha, distinct from all conceptions of the material ingredients mentioned above. Om Jnana Timanandasha Gnanjana Salakaya Chaksarvam Mitanena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Tribhascha Kriva Sindhu Vyevacha Pati Lano Pavana Vyo Vaishnavibhya Namo Namaha. Well, this verse in purport presents a perfect summary of the nature of the universe. Everything that's included here, everything is described here, all the different ingredients, the different energies of the Lord, are very nicely put in this verse in Srila Prabhupada's purport. To put this in a little context, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that Narada Muni asked 10 questions of Brahma, very short questions. And it began with verse 2 of this chapter, and the first one was Yat Rupam. Yat Rupam, that meant what is the form, Rupa, what is the form of the universe? Or what are its characteristics? So that was the first question of Narada Muni to Brahma, And in this verse, Brahma is answering that. And basically, he's saying, I guess if we could put it all succinctly in a nutshell, nothing exists other than the Lord. Krishna is everything. Everything is coming from Him. Everything is part of Him. And it is illusion to think there is anything different. Srila Prabhupada explains the ingredients of its creation, their interaction, the joy of the resultant actions, the living being, are all produced by the external and internal energies of Lord Krishna. Now, there's a second point. It's kind of a corollary. That is what Krishna is, and that is what that is His activity. And the corollary is to see anything differently, to see anything apart from Krishna, is illusion. And this is referred to by Srila Prabhupada, where he says in the purport, in the material world, the living entity is enticed by deluding nescience. In the spiritual world, he's in the normal condition of spiritual existence without any delusion. Now, this kind of, especially this last line, which is, but in this purport, kind of reminded me of a very famous verse. Anybody else think of another famous Bhagavatam verse that is similar? The last part of the verse here, Nichanurte Tisatva Vataha. Everything is part of Godhead Vasudeva. In truth, there is no other value in them. Well, there's probably a lot of good ones. But I was thinking of one of the Chatur Shlokis, the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2.9.34, Vite Ritam Yat Priyeta Na Priyeta Chatmani Tadvijad Atmanomayam Yatabaso Yatatamaha. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, it is no reality. No, it is my illusory energy, the reflection which appears in darkness. So this is the second one after Krishna first establishes himself very similar as everything. And then he's saying, if you see anything different than that, it's not in relation to me, it's illusion. Right? I don't know if some of you remember those from Miami. I remember back when we were studying this part of the Bhagavatam, our temple president, Abhirama, made us all memorize these Chatur Shlokas. So we spent lots of time over and over memorizing them. And I thought, well, this is kind of a pain because I've never been any good at memorization. But I'm so glad we did. You know, that I don't know if I remember them all today, but for years, I could, at least I could recite these such important verses. And it's where, of course, it's basically where Krishna reveals to Lord Rama, this is the truth. This is the absolute truth. So they're considered the nutshell verses or, the Chatur Shlokas that describe basically everything you need to know. And then from those four verses, of course, Lord Brahma expanded that, and eventually the whole Bhagavatam, develops from that. So, I just read a little bit of the purport to that verse. Prabhupada says, misconceiving one thing for another is called illusion. For example, accepting a rope as a snake is illusion, but the rope is not false, or the snake is not false either. The rope as it exists in front of the illusion person is not at all false, but the acceptance is illusory. Accepting as a snake is the illusion. Therefore, the wrong conception of accepting this material manifestation as being divorced from the energy of the Lord is illusion, but it is not false. And this illusory conception is called the reflection of the reality of darkness of ignorance. Anything that appears as apparently not being produced out of my energy is called maya. The conception that the living entity is formless or the Supreme Lord is formless is also illusion. So basically, to consider that all the forms that we see are simply illusion, or to be overly attached and think that those forms are all there is, either way is illusion. But most often in philosophical discussions, there tends to be more discussion in the Bhagavatam and others really about how Vaishnava philosophy contrasts with impersonalism or Mayavadi philosophy, who often think that everything is illusion. And this really reminded me, this whole discussion here, I've been reading the prayers by personified Vedas, chapter 87 of the Bhagavatam, and specifically I've been reading the commentaries by Srila Jiva Goswami. So not only is it very deep philosophy and very enlightening, but extremely humbling. If you ever think that you, well, for me at least, if one thinks one is very intelligent and somewhat philosophically inclined, try Jiva Goswami's commentaries on prayers by Prasanna his. You know, I understood some of it. And so I'm going to talk about some of the parts that I understood. And there are many parts I really didn't understand very well. I'm going to have to reread several times, you know, to get the full import of it. But one cannot be one thing he talks about that was a very interesting point is you cannot be illusioned by something that does not exist. I'm going to discuss that a little bit, and it's particularly in relation to the 26th verse of that chapter 87, which is the three modes of material nature comprise everything in this world. This is the Shruti speaking. From the simplest phenomena to the complex human body. Although these phenomena appear real, they are a false reflection of the spiritual reality in a superimposition of the mind upon you. Still, those who know the Supreme Self consider the entire material creation to be real, inasmuch as it is non-different from the Self, capital S, Self, Super Self. Just as things made of gold are indeed not to be rejected, since their substance is actually gold, so this world is undoubtedly non-different from the Lord who created it and then entered within it. So, anything that comes from the Lord, which is basically everything, because we've already said nothing is different. So anything coming from the Lord has value. And the example is given here by the personified Vedas is the example of gold. Gold has value. And thus anything made of gold also has value. If I had a gold ring, I said, well, this isn't really gold. It's a transformation of gold. It's not valuable. People say, you're crazy. The gold, it's probably worth more than the gold because it also has some artwork or, you know, something attached to it as well as just the value of the gold. You know, so we can understand that. And Jiva Goswami further states that in refutation of the Mayavadi conception that everything in the world is ultimately illusion, that anything we can imagine has a basis in something known. So he gives examples like an illusion we think a shell is silver. You know, sometimes they're shiny, a shell. We might think that's silver. Or the rope is a snake. That's the traditional one that we always hear about in the scriptures. He said, but there is a shell, and there is silver, and there is a rope, and there is snake. So there's an illusion. The illusion is misattribution to those things, thinking one is the other. But it's not that they don't exist. And the Srila Prabhupada gave other examples like that. I remember one, I don't know where it is, we talked about, you see a golden mountain in a dream. Remember that one? He says, you know, the reason there is no golden mountain, but you know, you've seen gold and you've seen a mountain, so your mind puts it together. You know, you say, oh, well, there's all kinds of things that I could think of that have absolutely no existence. I'm thinking of a green unicorn. Okay, but you know green. You've seen in stories or pictures of unicorn. So in other words, when you think about it, you cannot create or imagine something that does not exist. You cannot create something out of nothing. Can you? Try to. Anything that you can even imagine has some basis of reality, and you just put it together in different ways. And when we say people are creative and they do something original, that just means they put elements together in a little different way than maybe someone else has at that particular time. You know, so the living entity cannot imagine or create a material manifestation of these bodies unless they had a reality. So in other words, they're saying this theory of illusion that the impersonalists have is that somehow we are imagining this material world. We're imagining ourselves as separate from Brahman. We're just imagining all that. Well, how could we imagine these things if they didn't exist? How could, all right, none of this exists, right? Think for a moment. There is no real material world. There's no real material elements. There's not even really yourself because everything is undifferentiated Brahman. Okay. How in the world did we come with this extremely complicated material universe? You know, which has just incredible amount of working. But what does it make of our own bodies? Basically, the Shrutis say in this chapter that's illogical, and Jiva Goswami calls it some things that are even stronger, like nonsensical, and, you know, like this is like, you know, it's almost like, you know, crazy. I mean, it really makes absolutely no sense. So Jiva Goswami says this theory of illusion, this impersonalist neti-neti, it's not this and not that, he calls it, it's an infinite regression. And an infinite regression philosophically basically goes nowhere. And he gives example, this is where I'm saying this stuff gets a little tough. He gives example of a blind man who says, I have some gold. So how do you know it's gold since you can't see it? You know, you could feel everything, but you really probably couldn't totally 100% determine that it's gold, you know, without seeing it. He said, oh, well, I was told to me by another blind man that this was gold. I said, well, how did he know? Well, he was told by another blind, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You go nowhere. So finally, you'd have to at some point say that there was some man with sight who told the original one, there's got to be somebody there who actually has seen it, who knows it. Now, of course, the impersonalist will say, okay, I can accept that, and that stopping point is Brahman. You know, there's Brahman originally, and then maybe all the chain of illusion came about from that. But, as we've already talked about, formlessness could not conceive of form. How could a formless Brahman conceive of all of these forms? In other words, it would have to have knowledge of form, experience of form, and as we know, actually have form. So this is all, you know, part of these issues that come up. And but an entity with form can understand, this is the on the opposite side, an entity, living entity or the supreme, with form can understand the absence of form, right? Like, if you're in the light, the absence of light is darkness, right? So if you're in light, you can imagine darkness. There wouldn't be any light here. But if you were in the dark and that's all you knew, so you're blind, you know, can you really imagine light? You know, it's difficult to, you can't imagine something that you don't know. You can do it one way, it only goes one way. You can imagine something, the absence of what is known. And so basically, yes, we can understand, since we understand form, you know, there could be a formless aspect, Brahman, basically, of Krishna.
Unless you have a pre-experience of life. I mean, if I can retain that...
You would have to have a previous experience, yes.
Yeah.
That's it, exactly. If you had no experience, you couldn't imagine it. So the only way that the jiva could imagine all these forms is if he had previous experience, because it's our real nature. And of course, Krishna, being the supreme form, easily can, you know, expand from his variety of energies all these different forms. And, you know, as we know, if we talk to him, you know, Bhagavad Gita tells us, Brahmanohi Pratishtha Tam, that Krishna is the basis of impersonal Brahman. So there is Brahman, there is formlessness as well as form, but it's all coming from the original form of Krishna. So there's different kinds of illusions that people have, and several are mentioned in the prayers of the personified Vedas, and I'm not going to go through them all, but Srila Jiva Goswami basically goes through and refutes all of them, all the different types of illusion there are, and it's all based upon the Shrutis, which is interesting. Jiva Goswami's commentaries are very interesting because he gives pages and pages, very in-depth, and all the evidence he gives, quoting verse after verse after verse, is all from the original Shrutis, the Upanishads, the Vedas, the four Vedas, Rig Veda, like that, because those sort of, there's a certain class of, I guess you think they're more purist Brahmins who only accept Shruti and not Smriti, right? Shruti is the words directly spoken by Krishna, where Smriti is those spoken about Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam is Smriti. It's not directly. So they only say the four Vedas, the Upanishads, I don't know what else is included in the Shrutis, but, you know, basically it's very limited to just those things that they say were spoken directly by the Lord. And other things they don't really accept. They accept it's kind of like secondary, you know. So he used all of these Upanishads, you know, Katha Upanishads, Spateshvatara Upanishads, so many, and basically proved the existence of the personal form of Krishna and all the other Vaishnava philosophy, because it's all there. They just have to find it. You know, even like Vedanta Sutra. You can prove Vaishnava philosophy through Vedanta Sutra, although Shankaracharya did his best to show that it proved impersonal philosophy. Okay, what are some of these illusions? Thinking that everything is illusion, and that's their greatest illusion, right? They're such illusion that they think everything is illusion. So where can you go with them from that? They think that God, the living entity, is formless. And another illusion is that the jiva is identical with God. You know, once we get past all of this illusion, then we become one with God. That's a very common one. And many people, even if they're not some kind of, you know, Vedantist or Jnani, many people just casually who are involved in spiritual life, you find this, don't you? You know, I mean, it's not at all uncommon. I remember going, several years ago, I was going to Jacksonville, I think it was monthly or every once in a while, and we were doing these home programs, and we were going through the Bhagavad Gita, like a chapter each time, or something like that. Anyway, I'd gone to about four of these, and we had kind of a nice crowd, you know, it was 95%, you know, Indian bodied. And, but you know, they were all very attentive. I thought they were all pretty much kind of Vaishnavs, and they're all coming along. And this one woman who was a very nice woman, I'd spoken to her many times, she came every time, and she said, I have a question. Or she said something like, well, then after we become completely self-realized, then we know that we're all God, right? I go, no. Which took me aback, because that can be so deeply entrenched in people, that idea of impersonalism. You know, that we all become God. You know, because they've heard it. They just heard it for all their lives, you know, or whatever. I mean, obviously this person was very attracted to Krishna, but they thought, well, yeah, Krishna's nice, but there must be something, you know, they think there's something beyond that, you know, that Krishna must have come from the Brahman. Now, that's the kind of the better side of the Brahmavadis or the people who are impersonalists, you know, who are not against Krishna, but they just think, you know, the Brahman is first. You know, then isn't that kind of basically it? And so like the Mayavadis just say Krishna's a loser, they're offenders. And Prabhupada did not like Mayavadis and he went after them all the time. Because they are actually offenders. They're saying Krishna does not exist. You know, he's basically illusion. And when you say that about our most worshipful Lord Krishna, we don't like that very much. You know? Okay. So now another interesting thing about illusion. Here's another interesting one about illusion. Vishma Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on 2934, which is the, you know, the first one of the Chaturshloki, says that there's two forms of illusion. In darkness, one doesn't see real objects in the room, right? You can't see anything, so that's a kind of illusion, that you don't see anything, although it's there. The other one is you imagine unreal objects, like there might be thieves or snakes in the room. You could imagine, your mind starts imagining all things that aren't there. It says, but when the light is there, you see what is there. You see not only the actual objects, but you also don't create these imaginary or illusory ones. So that's kind of like what Maya is, or illusion. That it, you know, that we don't see the reality of spiritual life, we don't see the reality of Krishna, and we create all these other philosophies and all these other things which aren't real. You know. So, Srila Prabhupada says, I'm sorry, I forgot, I didn't put down what purport this is from. In all circumstances, neither the material ingredients nor the spiritual parts and parcels are independent of the personality of Godhead Vasudeva. For all things, whether For all things, whether products of the external, internal, or marginal potencies of the Lord, are simply displays of the same effulgence of the Lord. Just as light, heat, and smoke are displays of fire. None of them is separate from the fire. All of them combine together to be called fire. And of course, you know, this idea is completely confirmed in so many scriptural places, Bhagavad Gita 9, 4, and 5. Krishna says, by me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All things are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. So again, this idea that, you know, Krishna is within everything, but not within everything. In other words, he created it, but he does not lose his identity. It's not that he creates everything, he expands in everything, and then his identity is gone. No, retains his complete identity, so in a sense he's not in this material manifestation, but yet his energy brought it all about. It's pretty amazing, really. Prabhupada says a purport to this. The Lord says that everything is resting on him. This should not be misunderstood. The Lord is not directly concerned with the maintenance and sustenance of this material manifestation. He has so many demigods, you know, he has so many assistants that can take care of maintaining this material world. Sometimes we see a picture of Atlas holding the globe on his shoulder. He seems very tired of holding the great earthly planet. This should not be entertained in connection with Krishna as upholding this created universe. Although everything is resting on him, he is aloof. And he gives example of the king and all his different departments. The king expands by his energies. He has all these appointed administrators, department heads, etc., cabinet, all these people that are doing all this work. So in one sense, he's manifesting this. He's appointing all these people. It's all part of him. But yet he's, you know, he's sitting back in his home or wherever, somewhat aloof also. So he's also separate. And another example Prabhupada gives is, just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over creation. And everything is resting on that energy. Of course, and behind all this, we understand from these verses that Krishna is in control of everything. He says, Mayada Kshena Prakriti Suyate Satchvatram. This material nature, Krishna's energy, is working under his direction. So in the Bhagavad Gita and these other verses, we get a lot of, you know, I am this, but I'm not this. You know, I become part of everything, but yet I'm aloof. I remain aloof. So what is this? Basically, in philosophical terms, we're looking at the philosophy that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us, Achinta Bhedabheda Tattva, right? That Krishna and the living entity are qualitatively one, although we're quantitatively different. Krishna has both personal and impersonal features. He does not lose his identity, you know, when he spreads his energies and his impersonal energy. Oh, and there's nothing interesting about that, as kind of being described here. As far as, in the purport, Prabhupada mentioned that he has two impersonal energies, Prakriti and Brahman. Those are both impersonal, the material, because, you know, and there's also, of course, two personal energies, which is Jiva and Krishna, Paramatma, or the Purusha avatars, whatever we're talking about, in this material world. So it's kind of interesting that they're all... Everything, Prakriti is external energy. The others are all internal energy, in a sense, because, you know, the Jivatma is separate in one sense, called Tatashta Shakti, but it is part of internal energy, spiritual energy. But yet, we have also this division, the personal and impersonal. So both of those energies are there. So nothing is different from the Absolute, yet Krishna has varied energies. And his creation is understood through understanding his energies. So this connection of material creation, these expansions of energies, brings about, going back again to our favorite other philosophical groups, that there's basically two competing philosophies. One is Vaivartavada, which Sankaracharya promoted, called the theory of illusion. That's what we've been talking about, illusion. Everything is Brahman. All perceived differences are false, they're illusions of Maya. That's the, you know, where the Vaishnava philosophy is called Paranamvada, or the theory of transformation. In other words, God creates the world through his energies, his potencies. He is not transformed. He remains one, but his energies transform. Okay? Oh, I'm not going to read that. Oh, this is one nice verse. This is the last verse of the prayers by the personified Vedas, verse 50. Conclusion. He is the Lord who eternally watches over this universe, who exists before, during, and after its manifestation. He is the master of both the unmanifest material energy and the spirit soul. After sending forth a creation, he enters within it, accompanying each living entity. Obviously, it's Paramatma. He does enter as his expansion of Paramatma, super soul. There he creates the material bodies and then remains as their regulator. By surrendering to him, one can escape the embrace of illusion, just as a dreaming person forgets his own body. One who wants liberation from fear should constantly meditate upon him, Lord Hari, who is always on the platform of perfection and never subject to material birth. So this is kind of a summary of the philosophy, and also then it gives us a little prescription of how to get out of this material energy by always thinking and meditating upon Lord Krishna. So Krishna eternally exists before, during, and after creation. He's the cause and control of everything. The jiva can transcend material nature by surrender to Krishna. So nothing exists outside of him. By his glance, the jivas enter this world. It's kind of interesting. One example is Jiva Goswami gave us. It's like if you have in water, you have a pond, and you have the air and the air. The water comes up, combines with the air, and forms a bubble. You know, so it's air and water combined. So in a sense, the living entities who have material bodies, this material world, is obviously it's a combination of the jiva with prakriti, with the material energy, and of course the jivatma gives life to the body, gives life to prakriti, but have is dead matter without the presence of the soul. And probably gives so many examples of that. No one's attracted to a dead body. Once the soul is gone, life is gone. You know, you obviously see the difference. So, Krishna regulates and controls material nature by Paramatma. Krishna is what's called, he is the ingredient cause and the efficient cause. So, sometimes this is called Nimitta, Upadana, and Nimitta. From this purport, Nakshupadeva speaks to the Lord as being the cause of all causes and control of everything of the entire universe, composed of Maya and the Jiva. Because they are his energies, and because energies are not different from their source, the Shaktivan, he is also the unmanifested nature Maya and the Jiva. This establishes the Supreme Lord as the ingredient cause of creation, Upadana Karanam, and the efficient cause, Nimitta Karanam, and also the Supreme Controller. Sometimes other terms are used, like remote. Prabhupada sometimes would say the remote cause and the immediate cause. The immediate cause of manifestation is there, the interaction of the living entities of the jiva prakriti. But behind that is the remote cause, or nimitta, which is Krishna. So material nature is the immediate cause of manifestation, but the original cause behind that, we could say that the remote cause, is Krishna. Sometimes, I'll continue reading that purport. Sometimes people think that the cause of an earthen pot is the earth. We see on a potter's wheel, sufficient amount of earth to produce many pots. And although unintelligent men will say the earth on the wheel is the cause of the pot, those who are actually advanced will find the original cause is the potter, who supplies the earth and moves the wheel. Material nature may be a helping factor in the creation of this cosmic manifestation, but it's not the ultimate cause. That's from a purport, Bhagavatam 4:31-17. So, we can transcend material nature by surrendering to Krishna, thinking of Krishna, meditating on Krishna, according to this verse. Now, it's interesting, in the prayers by the personified Vedas, it all started with an original question by Maharaj Parikshit, which was, how can we, with the material mind, understand the absolute truth, who is beyond material qualities? And that led to, Krishna says, well, there was this conversation, and then there was this conversation, and finally it led to the conversation with the personified Vedas with, well, it started with Narada Muni. Narada Muni asked Narayana Rishi. Narayana Rishi referred him, this conversation with the personified Vedas, I think. Was it with Vishnu? Does anyone remember? Mahavishnu? I think it was with Mahavishnu. They're glorifying Mahavishnu, basically. Or Narayana. And so, thus all this philosophy is spoken. So, in his purport to this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives a very simple answer. He says, the mind can perceive God by the power of devotion, bhakti, arising from the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So, we, with our very small minds and intelligence, could not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, and we all know if we really think deeply about these things, it's very difficult to fully understand. And we never fully understand. Nobody understands everything. But we can begin to understand, we can perceive God by the power of bhakti and the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So by Krishna's mercy, we can understand him. I was reading it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I think it was one of his commentaries in Manashiksha, which you helped translate that, right? That recent version?
Yeah.
It's a very wonderful book, a new printing of Manashiksha by Raghunath Das Goswami, and Pran Govinda Prabhu helped translate some of the Bengali. the original Bengali. And was that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was wrote in Bengali? Yeah. And then they have also commentators by some contemporary Vaishnavas like Shivaram Swami and Sachinanda Swami, Bhaktivedanta Swami, which are really, really nice. Their understandings and their realizations, which maybe is a little closer to, well, they're way above, but at least not quite as far away as Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at one part, he says, there's really two ways that you can understand Krishna, that you can get, you know, at that point of realization. He says, one is through careful, long practice of sadhana bhakti, a practice of devotion, and that will get you there. He says, but there's another way. Helplessly praying for the mercy of Krishna and Radharani. I think sometimes that's the way to go, because it's so difficult to do everything right. In other words, the practice of sadhana, it's really, and not that we shouldn't do it, we have to do it. It's the order of our spiritual master and the whole sampradaya, you know, to practice sadhana bhakti. But while we're practicing, we have to rely on the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of Krishna, the mercy of Radharani, to really give us that realization, give us that taste of Krishna consciousness, you know, while we're in this practice stage of our life. I'm going to read one more. Okay, finally, then there was the question, how does one remain active in the body after liberation? Somehow that was asked also now. Anyway, this is from the same chapter from Krishna book. We'll conclude here with one of Prabhupada's statements. How the living entity becomes liberated from the modes of material nature after surrendering unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead is illustrated by the example of a sleeping man within a room. When a man is sleeping, everyone sees that he is present within the room, but actually the man himself is not within that body. For while sleeping, a man forgets his body existence, although others may see that his body is present. Similarly, a liberated person engaged in devotional service to the Lord may be seen by others to be engaged in household duties of the material world, but since his consciousness is fixed in Krishna, he does not live within this world. His engagements are different, exactly as a sleeping man's engagements are different from his bodily engagements. Let's stop there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any discussion, comments, questions? Got a garage, people? I've almost lost my voice here. Do we have a microphone? No.
Very nice class. If the Maharaj say that God has no form, so we could say to them, well, how come you have form?
You have what?
How come you have form?
No.
How come there's so much form?
Yeah.
How can you say the form is illusion? Mm-hmm. They can be defeated, actually, but of course they won't accept defeat. They'll word juggle out of it. But
yeah.
But we could say, well, how come you have form then?
Well, let's say, well, it's just illusory. It's not real. So they'll say something.
Yeah. So, but here it is, right?
Didn't Prabhupada say once, oh, it says, oh, so you say that your body is all illusion? Let me kick you and see what you say.
Sometimes we hear some reconciliation of some controversy that we're actually in the spiritual world, but we're just dreaming this all. So is this in line with what your Jiva Goswami was explaining? And
some people say that we're in the spiritual world, but we're
yeah,
dreaming
because
in the material
sometimes
world.
There are some controversy, you know, the famous controversy. So we're actually in the spiritual world, but we're just dreaming this all up. So is this in line with Jiva Goswami's explanations that you were...
Not that I understand, because throughout it, the discussion is that it's a misattribution as far as thinking that, you know, like the rope and the snake or whatever, in other words, that, you know, that you're seeing one through the other, but that they're both real. He gives so many examples about the pot and the clay and, you know, gold and the potter and the gold and the clay, both are real, you know, but we mistake this body as being ourselves. We mistake this world as being absolute. You know, that's the illusion. But it is real. We're here. Yeah, I mean, I think Jiva would refute that completely. Now, are we pure spirit soul? Yeah, I think everyone would agree with that. Do we have a spiritual, eternal relationship with Krishna? Yes. And are we, in a sense, you could say in a sense, we're dreaming because we're an illusion in this material world. We're dreaming or thinking that we're these bodies and we have all these activities. So, I mean, I guess it depends upon exactly how you're defining that, you know. Brian Govinda?
I mean, there are verses like Brihadaranya Upanishad, there is a famous verse. Tasya vaya tasya purushasya deva sthane bhavata. Deva means two. Sthane bhavata. Idancha paraluka sthanancha tasmin sandam tritiya sapna sthanam. So in between these two, there is a third place called dream. Sapna sthanam. Like a dream. Tasmin sannidhe ubhasthane pashyanti idancha paraluka sthanancha. And when somebody is practicing Krishna consciousness, then he can see there is a spiritual reality and there is a material reality. Mm-hmm. And he is in between, he can make a choice which one to go. So in that sense, it is like a dream, that make a choice to be an illusion or to go out of illusion.
Right, and Prabhupada gives that example that in, you know, persons like a sleeping man, you have to wake them up with Krishna consciousness to come to the real self, the real sense. So you could use that terminology. I think you just have to be careful that you don't negate the existence of the material energy of Prakriti as being real.
I haven't
heard that controversy, by the way. That was new to me.
I probably missed half of it, but dreams are real.
And dreams are real.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are real.
Yeah, they're definitely real. Well, so is this outside dream. That's the illusion. That's the illusion, that not that it's not real, but that we misidentify with it as something that it's not. Yeah. You know, it's, that's this body, it's real, but the illusion is we identify this as our essential identity, which
exactly.
It's not. I mean, at best, it's a reflection of where our consciousness is currently flowing, or has been flowing. Perhaps, maybe.
He's trying to find.
Recently, I was studying on. By the way, thank you for. Defining the difference between the Brahmavadi and Mayavadi. Mm-hmm. I hope everybody caught it. This is one of the misunderstanding by a lot of devotees even. What's the difference between Mayavadi and Brahmavadi? Brahmavadis are not offended. You have explained very nicely. But I was researching also the Mayavadi's conclusion on this illusion. They said that when Brahman, they accept the Brahman. Of course, you gave that explanation also, neti, neti, negation. What is Brahman? They don't have experience, but they say, this is not, this is not, this is not, then whatever is left. They don't know what it is, but that's their assumption. Whatever is left after rejecting everything. So they say, when that Brahman comes in contact with Sattagun, mode of goodness, then it takes the form. And the evidence is 2.7.2.6. Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu, when he gave the funeral eulogy to his relatives, is one of the, to me, was attractive more than Bhagavad Gita, the way Hiranyakashipu was explaining about the soul and the body. Mm-hmm. Now, he said that God is merciful, but he gave up his compassionate nature, by the help of illusory energy, took the form of a pig and killed my brother. Now I will kill him and with his blood I will bathe my brother's last rite. This will be the best way of celebrating the funeral.
Okay,
so that verse, Acharya, they take that verse that, oh, Hiranyakashipu was a number one Mayavadi. Because that's what the conception is. He said that Lord was merciful, but he took the help of Maya and got this Varaha form or peak form. That is their misunderstanding. Then the second point they say that when Brahman comes in contact with Rajagun, passion, then it transforms into Jiva, living entity. And that Brahman, when it comes in contact with Tamagun, then it becomes matter. So they explain all these matters, spirit and the God,
that,
all three.
That may be okay, but where did those come from? Where did the gunas come from? How did they just come out of nowhere, exist, you know? So that means they would be supreme.
That's ultimate
material nature would be supreme with that philosophy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was the only thing that existed originally. Brahman has no form. The only thing had any, you know, had any interaction would be the three gunas. That really makes no sense.
See, when we talk about form, they call it Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call God. They just call Ishvara.
Yeah.
The conception of Ishvara means he has a form.
He has a form.
He has a form by the help of material nature, Sattva-guna.
That means then that God is influenced by material nature, and he,
correct,
again, material nature is almost superior because that gives him,
correct,
a form rather than he.
Correct.
Then
correct.
It's coming from him. Yeah. No, it's an offensive philosophy.
Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any. I remember one purport where Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, some people think that impersonal or Mayavadi philosophy is very difficult to understand. He said, that's because you can't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. He actually says that, you know. Because if you really go deeply into it, you have all these questions like, well, where did the gunas come from? Where did this come from? Now, it's interesting because, you know, Jiva Goswami wrote the Sandarbhas, and first, the first one was, of course, just basically talking about Bhagavatam and establishing it as the, you know, as the proof, the source of proof. In other words, we're, you know, that's our source of information is Bhagavatam, and he proved why it was superior to anything else. Then he wrote Paramatma Sandarbha, you know, Bhagavan Sandarbha, Krishna, etc. And he explains, he says, why he didn't write a Brahman Sandarbha. He did. In other words, he did Paramatma, he did Bhagavan, why didn't he do Brahman? He says, because there's nothing to talk about. Brahman has no form, has no activities, there's nothing there. Why should I write it about Brahman? You know, if it's just... You know, in other words, you could sum it up in a couple sentences. What's more, and who knows what is Brahman?
When you're explaining Brahman, Brahman is a substance. You're not saying it's nothing.
No, it's Krishna's spiritual effulgence from his body. It's described. Yeah.
But how?
It's spiritual energy. In fact, people can you can perceive Brahman energy, right? The spiritual energy, that's perceivable by people.
Yeah.
We just don't take it as that important.
What would you answer when some Catholics, because Catholic, the Catholic theology, according to Druta Karma Prabhu, that they say the God created from nothing. They literally say that, from nothing. What is that nothing? I just...
The Roman Catholic Church has reacted to Greek philosophy when they were making statements like that. The Greeks, there was a Greek, because that was their thing. The Greek natural philosophy was dominant. And then how do they assimilate their theology with that? And there was a certain line of reasoning in Greek philosophy that the material world is eternal. But Genesis says it was created. So it's not like the substance. And in this Greek line of reasoning, God's more of like a Lobama, he just manages it. You know, he's a secondary creator kind of a thing. So, you know, the Greeks...
Is it kind of deism?
It's a little bit like that. But God, what is it? The Demiurge was the name. So he's more like a secondary manager of this eternal material creation, this line of Greek reasoning.
Okay.
And the Catholics are there for emphasizing that God's independent and omniscient, and he could do anything with anything. And so he can create from nothing, ex nihilo. And of course, nothing, how are we defining nothing? You know, from us, it seems like nothing, but, you know, I mean, what is our, how much of this energy do we realize? I mean, maybe it seems like nothing in our everyday experience, but.
Well, we wouldn't necessarily disagree with that, but I think
yeah,
that, I think
exactly.
We would want to
clarify that nothing was something at first. There was nothing made well.
It's getting ready.
It's eternal. That's the problem.
Yeah, and then you can do anything.
Property, Bhagavan, and what, time?
Yeah.
Are eternal. And the fifth one, karma, changes, you know. So, in other words, they're eternally there as, as the energies of the Lord. So then he creates with those energies, but they do come from him. It's not that they're independent, and that's where they're right. It's not that they're independent of him.
Well, there's a lot of clarification here, but that was the reference points are limited as compared to this conversation we're having.
Okay.
And the one thing also they were emphasizing is God's unlimited. He could create from nothing, whereas the Greeks were emphasizing, the stuff is already there and he's managing it.
Yeah, okay.
Is that what nothing means? It means there, but it is not visible?
I think they mean unmanifest. Is that close?
Yeah, that's unmanifest. Yeah.
Which it is, because, it's at one point, there is no property, right? It's in its unmanifest, it's at pradana, the unmanifest state.
Exactly.
And then it becomes manifest, and that's all, of course, from, the Purusha incarnation, how it manifests into the material world.
As far as I understand. Invisible means something that's there, but actually, invisible can mean we just don't have the faculties to perceive.
Right. Okay, I think we should probably end. I think we're at the end of the Tuesday. Thank you all very much. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you.